This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yahis Wuhib in Washington, and coming up on Africa News Tonight...
Police have issued a statement saying that a 23-year-old Somali national named only as Mohammed has been detained on the southern island of Lampedusa over accusations that he raped and tortured asylum seekers in Libya before they made their journey across the Mediterranean to Italy.
That's Josephine McKenna reporting from Rome. Details coming up also. Churches in Zimbabwe have launched a campaign to promote tolerance and peace as the country prepares for next year's elections. And the UN criticizes a decision by a military tribunal in the DRC not to persecute soldiers accused of crimes against humanity. We have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, human rights groups have been reporting for many months about migrants being detained and severely mistreated in Libya. Now, Italian authorities have arrested a Somali man for his alleged role in that abuse. Libya is the main departure point for thousands of migrants making their way across the Mediterranean to Europe. Reporter Josephine McKenna is following the story from Rome. She spoke with VOA's Jody Capua.
Police have issued a statement saying that a 23-year-old Somali national named only as Mohammed has been detained on the southern island of Lampedusa over accusations that he raped and tortured asylum seekers in Libya before they made their journey across the Mediterranean to Italy. Now, police believe this suspect is part of an international organization linked to human trafficking, sexual violence, and even murder.
Josephine, do you have any idea how they found out about this suspect?
Well, witnesses or victims went to police once they arrived in Lampedusa, and they were terrified to turn him in, mainly because he had been threatening the alleged victims, who say they suffered the violence in a place called Hudefa in the Kufra district of Libya. Now, they have made statements to police saying that the suspect hit them with rubber tubes, threatened them with weapons, and one person said that on his arrival in Libya, the Somali was already in the location, in this place where they were staying. He said that he beat the migrants, he had fun humiliating them and asserting his supremacy with threats of violence as well, to the point where people were so badly beaten that the Libyan who actually ran this migrant holding center was concerned that the migrants had been beaten really so badly that there was a threat that they would actually die and he wouldn't get his money from the migrants. So this awful situation of extortion and maltreatment, and yet another story of what we've heard going on in these holding centres in Libya before migrants can actually pay their way and escape on the boat across the Mediterranean.
So he apparently decided to hide among the migrants going to Italy?
Yes, and this is another thing that's terribly confusing. When you talk to some of the organizations like MSF, Doctors Without Borders, and some of the others who are involved in these rescues, they say it's very confusing whether these traffickers are singled out, sometimes inappropriately, by police, or migrants are accused of being traffickers when they're not. But in this case, it seems that the victims themselves were so upset and so concerned that they went to the police themselves. Police have conducted an investigation over the last few weeks and have moved in, arrested him in Lampedusa and moved him to a prison in Sicily in the town of Agrigento.
Josephine, on another matter, have you heard of any new figures regarding rescues of migrants on the Mediterranean?
Yes, we've had some extraordinary numbers in the last 2 days. Around 8,500 migrants have been rescued in the southern Mediterranean, arriving in Italian ports. Around 5,000 were just rescued off the coast of Libya on Monday alone. And these asylum seekers were aboard around 14 ships Six of them have already docked and others are about to enter ports in the southern regions of Sicily and Calabria. Very hot conditions here. The temperatures are well above 30 and very, very hot and windy. And we know that this is the season when many migrants try to make their way across the Mediterranean. There's no sign of it slowing down at the moment, and we're expecting even more in the coming days and weeks.
That's reporter Josephine McKenna from Rome. She spoke to VOA's Jody Capua. In Niger, more than 50 migrants are presumed dead after human traffickers abandoned them in the northern desert without food or water. AFP reports 24 were rescued, but one later died. A local official says the migrants were rescued Sunday and were part of a three-vehicle convoy transporting about 70 people to Libya. The International Organization for Migration says the bodies of many of the victims have not been found due to a sandstorm. The convoy had left from the remote Niger town of Agadez, which has been called the smuggling capital of Africa. It's about a 750-kilometer journey to the Libyan border. In France, a woman who once supported the anti-immigrant National Front Party is now on trial for helping three migrants escape to Britain. What's more, Beatrice Houret says she fell in love with one of the migrants, who's identified only as Mokhtar. If convicted, Houret could be sentenced to 10 years in prison, but she says it's a risk worth taking for the love of her life. Before entering the courthouse, she spoke by phone to Mokhtar, who is living in England. Churches in Zimbabwe have launched a campaign to promote tolerance and peace as the country prepares for next year's elections. As Sebastian Imonfu reports from Harare, a pro-democracy coalition of NGOs in Zimbabwe says it is already worried by tensions building in the Southern African nation.
In an interview after the launch of a 12-month program to promote peaceful elections, Reverend Kenneth Mutata, the Secretary General of Zimbabwe Council of Churches, said his organization knows Christians make up the majority of the country's population. He was polite in responding to critics in the pro-government media who say the church is meddling in politics.
Yeah, that's true. We have no business in party politics, but every Zimbabwean has got responsibility over what happens to them. And if you define politics as a way of distribution of power, the one who decides on the distribution of power, of resources, then it is a concern for everyone. And the only reason why we enter into this discussion is because our nation is not healed. There are many problems in our nation. And if we do not address these issues as the church, people come to church every Sunday. We are hosting the 80% of the population. If we renegade on this responsibility, I think we'll have failed the citizens of Zimbabwe.
He says the churches are saying no to violence and violent candidates, no to corrupt candidates, no to incompetent candidates, and no to abuse of Zimbabwe's constitution. Director Justina Mukoko of the Zimbabwe Peace Project, a coalition of pro-democracy NGOs, says that is not all.
The media is awash with hate language. And what that does at the local level, it translates to physical violence. For me, what I would want leaders to be speaking about, and also the media, is basically to speak against political violence and reduce this hate language rhetoric that is all over the media, because it doesn't do us any good. We are months away from the election, but I think at the rate that we are going, it's a bit concerning.
In 2008, the African Union nullified results of an election in which President Robert Mugabe had declared himself winner. That was after the main opposition leader, Morgan Tsvangirai, had withdrawn from the contest, citing deaths of his supporters at the hands of suspected members of the ruling ZANU-PF. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
The UN has criticized the decision by a DRC military tribunal not to prosecute soldiers accused of crimes against humanity. The allegations were linked to ongoing violence in the Kasai region. The tribunal, however, will prosecute the soldiers on charges of murder, mutilation, and cruel and degrading treatment. AFP says a video shows uniformed men firing on civilians and then walking among the bodies. The UN's director of the Joint Human Rights says prosecuting them for crimes against humanity, crimes could have prevented other violations and excessive force. The charges were dropped because there is no officially declared conflict in Kasai. You were listening to African News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kHz, on the Voice of America. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. Sixteen past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Italian authorities have arrested a Somali man for his alleged role in the abuse of migrants. Churches in Zimbabwe have launched a campaign to promote tolerance and peace as the country prepares for next year's elections. And a decision by a military tribunal in the DRC not to prosecute soldiers accused of crimes against humanity is being criticized by the UN. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Hepatitis B is spreading in parts of northern Uganda and the country's West Nile region. Authorities link the problem in part to the influx of South Sudanese refugees. Area officials say refugees entering Uganda who need treatment, including vaccinations, consume a large part of Uganda's health budget. Catherine Nambi has the story from Kampala.
A majority of South Sudanese fleeing violence in their country head towards Uganda's West Nile region, which is reporting an increase in hepatitis B infections. According to health officials, many arriving South Sudanese are infected, while others have not yet been immunized. Apenyo Kennedy is a medical clinical officer at Paglinya Health Center 2 in Paglinya Refugee Settlement in the West Nile region, near the border with South Sudan. He says the number of people that test positive to the disease during screening is increasing.
When we test, like, let's say if it's 50, out of the 50 we can get 3 or 4 positive. I would say the rate of positivity is high. Before the influx of South Sudanese, it was a bit low, but when the South Sudanese came in, the rate actually become high. And as I talk now, the rate is actually higher.
To control the disease, diagnosis and vaccination have been heightened in the settlements, but according to Taco Steven, a medical clinical officer at Maji 3 Health Center in Maji Refugee Settlement, the number of those who show up for the services is overwhelming.
Every Tuesday, we carry out general vaccination of people who turn negative against hepatitis B. On average, it's 70. Particularly this week, we have vaccinated 74. So It ranges from 60 to 80. And then for those who turn positive, we register them and then we give them an appointment of 6 months. So after 6 months, they come for retest. So again, if they turn positive, that is when we refer them for liver function test as the protocol requires.
Titus Jogo is a refugee desk officer in the Adjumani district of West Nile region. He says the influx of refugees has worsened the already high burden of hepatitis B in West Nile and northern Uganda regions.
We have cases of hepatitis B, which is bigger in the refugee population as compared to Adjumani. Adjumani is the West Nile region, and the West Nile region and the great northern Uganda, you know, hepatitis B is a problem. But again, it has been made worse by the number of refugees who have come infected.
Northern Uganda records the second highest hepatitis B rates at 21.7%, while the West Nile region comes third with 18.5% of the total Ugandan hepatitis B prevalence. It is transmitted through contact with someone carrying the virus, including during sex or from mother to child during birth. It can also be transmitted by contaminated needles during injection. Symptoms include vomiting, yellowish skin, fatigue, and abdominal pain. Jogo says the Ugandan government is shouldering a huge burden of vaccinating and treating the refugees.
We receive most of these children and pregnant mother women who have not yet been vaccinated, but with the continuous influx, we've gone to incur more expenses on the procurement of additional vaccines for vaccination and immunization.
It is estimated that at least 3.5 million people are living with hepatitis B in Uganda, accounting for 10% of the population. In 2010, the decision-making body of the World Health Organization recognized viral hepatitis as a global public health problem and the need for governments to take action to prevent, diagnose, and treat the illness. WHO works with governments and NGOs to develop and implement strategies to prevent the spread of the disease. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA Africa News in Kampala.
Despite reports of questionable financial conduct, the Vatican says it will proceed with plans to appoint Archbishop Jean Zerbo as Mali's first cardinal. AFP reports Zerbo, who's 74 and recovering from an illness, made the trip to the Vatican for tomorrow's ceremony. He played a major role in peace negotiations in Mali. However, media report says he was one of three church officials in Mali with access to more than $13 million at a private bank in Switzerland. The accounts were opened by the Bishops' Conference of Mali, which denied any wrongdoing. Dr. Akunumi Adesina, president of the African Development Bank, has been awarded the 2017 World Food Prize. He received the award during a ceremony at the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C. on June 26. Adesina was acknowledged for being a driver of change in African agriculture for over 25 years and for improving food security for millions of people across Africa. The prize includes $250,000. VOA's Kim Lewis spoke with Dr. Adesina about winning the prestigious award and about his vision for Africa's agriculture.
For somebody who grew up out of poverty myself, whose father grew up as a farmer, who worked on other people's farm as a laborer for a long time, and who is committed to transforming the lives of people via agriculture, I feel tremendously elated, but also equally humbled by the recognition by the World Food Prize. But beyond that, I feel it also puts quite a lot of wind behind the sails for me in terms of what I have to do in the future, because the job is not completed. We still have today more people to feed in Africa. We still have about 250 million people that are undernourished in Africa. I'm grateful for the acknowledgement, but equally more grateful for the support this gives for the bigger vision that I have to make sure Africa fully feeds itself.
Do you think the agriculture industry is moving in the right direction in Africa?
Well, first and foremost is that, Kim, you know, agriculture for me needs to, in Africa, move into a different direction, because the majority of the poor people in Africa today are living in the rural area. We've got about 65% of the population living in the rural area who depend on agriculture for a living. And so the way that agriculture performs determines the future of all these millions of people. And my view has always been that agriculture for a long time in Africa has been taken as a development activity, as a development project. Agriculture is not a way of life. It's not a development project. Agriculture is a business. Africa has today 65% of all the arable land that's uncultivated in the world. So Africa should not only be feeding itself, Africa should help feed the world as well. And so I believe that the direction, just what I've been pushing in my career, is for agriculture to be treated as a business, one that can allow the generation of wealth all across rural economy. And I think that when that happens, we'll be able to change our rural areas from being zones of economic misery to zones of economic prosperity. That's the first thing. Secondly, is that we must make agriculture cool for young people.
What are some ways you see in making agriculture cool for young people?
Today, you know, if you think about people like Kellogg's that makes cornflakes. So Kellogg makes cornflakes and he was a billionaire. Well, cornflakes is basically just corn that is extruded with a little bit of vitamins and sugar in it. And so the future millionaires and billionaires of Africa should be coming out of agriculture because that's what Africa has. But for that to happen, we have to add value to everything we have. Look at the case today. Africa accounts for 75% of all the global production of cocoa, but Africa only gets 2% of the chocolate market, which is $100 billion a year market. And so the price of cocoa will decline, but never the price of chocolate. The price of cotton will fall, never the price of textile or apparels. The price of coffee always declines. People who go to Starbucks make a lot of money. So I really believe that the direction that African agriculture must go is Africa should never be at the bottom of the value chain. It must industrialize, add value to all the agricultural things that it produces, turning cotton into textile and garment, turning cocoa into chocolate and chocolate drinks and things that allow us to make money from what it produces. So I'm a big proponent of the fact that we must have agricultural industrialization in Africa. The other direction that I think is very important for agriculture in Africa is that we must have the banks lending more to agriculture. Because today the banks are lending only 3% of total banking in Africa going to agriculture. But these are areas that I have worked on significantly in my career. For example, when I was in Rockefeller Foundation in the 1990s, I started an initiative to get banks to lend more to agriculture by de-risking their lending to the agricultural sector. And we started off with a small bank in Centenary Rural Development Bank, it was called, in Uganda in 2000. And that bank, we put in about $400,000 onto their balance sheet to lend to farmers and to test and see whether farmers will default. Well, you know, years after, the Rockefeller Foundation went back and did an assessment of that work and found the bank was lending $20 million of its own money because it saw agriculture paid off.
That was Dr. Akinwumi Adesina, president of the African Development Bank, the winner of the 27 World Food Prize. He spoke with VOA's Kim Lewis. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhibi in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the sunny side of sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Keith Holmes, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next, Straight Talk Africa, a conversation with the Voice of America director, Amanda Bennett, on her recent trip to Africa and VOA's Africa initiatives, including meeting with African government officials, affiliate executives, media members, journalism students, and the African youth.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa.
VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5-minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
VOAAfrica.com.
On VOAAfrica.com, the news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
VOAAfrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.